Defense Secretary Lorenzana, welcome to Conversation With.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Aileen.
Some months ago when you spoke to us, that was when you already said that, you know, things were being resolved in Marawi, and in truth, it appears to have been so. But the problem of terrorism hasn't actually been solved, has it, sir?
No. Some of the remnants of the Maoti, we heard rumors, and we are verifying this, that they are actually slowly recruiting again kids as young as 11, 12, or 13. And I think they still have some money. Lin, you have to remember that we were able to collect maybe close to half a billion pesos there when they were inside Marawi. And in fact, we saw them through our drones going around with boxes. And they are not heavy boxes, so they must be money. And we couldn't find those money. They were not left behind. So they were able to extricate some of the money out. And that's the one that we're using to pay the recruits. But we are still verifying this news, and hopefully we can nip them in the bud.
But isn't it this very worrying development? We see it in Marawi, and we've seen it very, very sadly now in Surabaya. The use of young children in essentially violent crimes.
Yeah, Lynn, that is a very concerning. It's a big concern to us. Because here in this region, no Muslims here has ever done any suicide bombing before. There were suicide commandos that attacked our camps sometime in 1990s in Cotabato, but they were actually Pakistanis, so they were not native Muslims. So this is very concerning. You know, people might get the idea that, yeah, this is a good thing to do, and, you know, copycats could just do it somewhere else. That's families. How could you now watch families, especially small kids, being used as social bombers? It is a big concern to us.
But what can be done, sir?
Well, we'll continue to talk to. We have organized a group to de-radicalize the kids in Mindanao, especially the Muslims, and we'll use them to talk to families. We will make some examples of this in Surabaya, and hopefully we can go around, because we have credible people from the Muslim community, the ulamas, the imams, the sultans, then the datus, who are with us in this program.
Isn't it very important, sir, that it doesn't become an us and them situation?
Yes. Yes, that's true. So it's not only Muslim, but even the Christian community there in the Muslim areas, we are asking them that. You know, not all Muslims are terrorists. That's a small percentage of those are terrorists who joined or have been radicalized by misled belief of radical Islam. And they are with us. Even the Catholic Church is with us in this.
If we look, though, sir, at the imposition of martial law, though, in Mindanao, some of the Muslim leaders argue that is emphasizing the us and them. If you make Mindanao continue to be under martial law, even after Marawi has been, so to say, freed, it gives the impression that all Muslims and the whole of the Muslim region in the Philippines and Mindanao is somehow suspect.
No, I think it's the contrary to that, Lynn. You know, martial law was declared not only in ARMM or the Autonomous Muslim Mindanao. It's the entire island. The Muslim provinces are only Lanao del Sur, Maguindanao, Basilan, Silu, and Tawi-Tawi. That's only five against many more, 10 or 15 Christian provinces. And martial law is in place in all of those areas. We also impose curfew in all those areas. So it's not, some people said, some people are telling me that we only limit this to the ARMM. No, don't do that. It will, you know, polarize people there against our policy. So it is the whole island of Mindanao.
So you are not just Defense Secretary. You have also previously been many, many years within the army. How diverse is the Filipino army, really, in terms of culturally diverse in terms of religious background?
Well, we have a sizable number of Muslim soldiers and officers, but the problem is not a lot of Muslims are volunteering to join the military, except those. In 1995, we enlisted 5,000 from the MNLF when the peace agreement was signed with Misrawi. They're still there, so 5,000. Now, there are also Muslims in Sambuanga and Hulu also that are coming into the military in a small number, but not sizable number.
Do you think that it would help to have a more diverse in background people within the military?
Of course,
so
of
that
course.
There would be that confidence
of course.
That when you see a military person, you do not immediately see someone who would be, so to say, antagonistic to you.
True. In fact,
someone who's defending you.
Starting last year, I gave a directive to the Philippine Army that 15% of their recruitment would come from the natives and the minorities. That include Muslims, the native population in Mindanao, and all over the country. There are natives also in Luzon, like the Igorots in the Cordillera. So that's being implemented. So we would see an uptick of minorities in the near future.
One of the great concerns of Philippines' neighbors is that you may be exporting terrorists to neighboring countries.
Well, I think the reverse is true. I think we have been the recipient of terrorists from other countries. Remember that a lot of those fighters that were found in killed in Marawi were, not Filipinos, but they look like Filipinos, but they could be Malaysians or Indonesians. And we found there was one Moroccan, there's even one Chechen, and one Saudi, and Indian. So we have been actually the receiving end of fighters coming here. And, what's happening in the three countries, Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines, that we have the most lenient laws, and they have very stringent laws in Malaysia, also in Indonesia. And so normally, where would the terrorists go? They would go to a place that they can thrive.
Like when you say happened. Lenient laws, what do you mean by lenient laws?
Well, we have this internal security law that is so... it doesn't give much teeth to our law enforcement, and that we're trying to amend it. You know, it's not even close to what the ISO of Singapore or ISO of Malaysia and or Indonesia.
So you're talking about things like detention without trial or...
Yeah.
You can do things on suspicion rather than you don't
I am
have
the
to...
martial law administrator of Mindanao, and I can only hold... A person, I suspect you to be a terrorist, I can only hold you for 3 days. If I have not filed any case against you and I need some evidence, I'll let you go. Australia can hold a suspect for 7 days, excluding weekends, Saturday and Sunday. So they have more leeway to gather information and everything. To me, after 3 days, if I cannot gather information, nobody would sign an affidavit that you are a terrorist. Bye-bye. You can go home.
Sir, would the Philippines go to war with China over the South China Sea?
No. I think even the Chinese wouldn't want to go to war with us. I think they know the importance of the South China Sea to everyone, to the Chinese, to the American, to the Japanese, Korean, and to the Philippines as well. In fact, close to about $5 trillion worth of goods passes that strait every year. And I think that's the lifeblood of China. So they say that they want to preserve peace, freedom of navigation and everything there in South China Sea. In like manner, the U.S. also conducts freedom of navigation operations there to ensure that the freedom of navigation is preserved. So I think they have the same purpose, and so I don't think anybody would go to war in that area.
But is there a red line for the Philippines where you would consider conflict?
My foreign secretary has enumerated three red lines during the congressional hearing the other day, but I'm not going to repeat them here. For some,
Well, it's just that some of them, sir, sound a little bit more, if you could argue, controversial. I mean, ones I'm sure that you would agree with are if, let's say, a soldier is killed, That directly, of course, for a defense secretary, that would sound like something that
That's actually one of the red lines.
But what about
by the president?
But what about the argument that unilateral mining of natural resources? That moves into, is that a red line as well?
Because I consider it a red line because, you know, we have two documents that says that area is under our sovereign territorial sovereignty. Not a territory, but we have sovereign rights over that, or over minerals and all the wealth under the sea.
You consider that a red line. So if that were to occur and President Duterte says that he thinks that this is worth a conflict, you would agree with him?
I agree with him. And I cannot foresee what will happen after that. Let's see what... but I don't think the Chinese will unilaterally drill for any minerals in the disputed area, especially within our EEZ.
The Chinese might argue that the Philippines has also been, in its own way, escalating things. Bringing the whole issue up to the international court, and now also with the recent military maneuvers with the U.S. Earlier in May, which were not far away from all the disputed areas. What do you think if they argue that there's no need for this kind of escalation?
I think the Chinese says that we escalated the issue by bringing it to the international court, but because of the unreasonable demands of the Chinese to come to the table. They want us to recognize their ownership first over the area before we can go to the table. So, but we cannot do that because we have one document then before we went to the arbitral court, like the UNCLOS. And we are a signatory to that. That gave us 200-mile exclusive economic zone.
The United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea.
Yes. And the second one is, what's the other one? You said...
The recent military drills that you've had.
We've been
with
doing
the US.
The military drills for a long time, even before this dispute. We've been doing it before. And in fact, when the Americans were still in Clark and in Subic, we've been doing it. They've been in fact Scarborough Resolve has been the target practice of the US Navy for the longest time.
Well, Many Chinese commentators argue that that's why it's been a problem for a long time as well, that this unnecessary.
The claims of China, they just came out recently, as early as 1992, 1993, when the U.S. left those bases, they started inching closer to the West Philippine Sea. I think we are not escalating. I think they were the ones who escalated it because there was no problem there before. And they just... You mean they just say, this is Nanda's line, this is ours. On what basis? Historical basis, which was debunked by the arbitral ruling.
On a scale of 1 to 10, though, sir, how would you now rate the South China Sea tensions?
Maybe 5.
Sort of a middle point.
Middle point, yeah.
Yeah. Not completely calm, but not dangerously worrying.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Do you think, though, that we will come lower, that we can de-escalate to bring it down to 3 or 4?
Yes, we can. I think all the claimants have to do is to come together and then talk about escalating the tensions there. But what's happening there when China starts to militarize, put defensive weapons in those claimed islands? They are not actually islands. There were reefs before which were reclaimed. And I think they just are escalating this detention some more.
Do you think that this is much connected to China's position as we could argue, a rising superpower, military superpower?
Yeah, maybe, yes, because they're trying to, they have now, they believe that they are now in this situation when they can also dictate some of the terms in the region. And that's what's happening.
Do you believe their arguments that they are benign and moderate in their claims for wanting really just a peaceful world and their moves in terms of military and other ways are largely defensive, not offensive?
So far, the actions belie those claims of being benign. No.
You are unconvinced?
I'm convinced, yeah.
If you had to choose between a military superpower, the US or China, which would you choose?
That's a very hard, different question. I'm going to answer you this way. We've been dealing with the Americans for more than 100 years. Although we have been dealing with the Chinese also and people to people for more than maybe 1,000 years. In fact, a lot of us have Chinese blood, even me. Very small Chinese blood. You know.
You do, sir?
Yeah, you know, my 4 years before. So I don't think we have to choose. We could be friends. We could deal with both. You know, we cannot. I have been telling my friends from other nations that we cannot avoid dealing with China. They are our closest neighbor and they are a superpower. We have to deal with them in the best way we can. And I don't believe that the Chinese are aggressive to take over or colonize other countries. They haven't. Their history doesn't bear the fact that the even at the height of their the power in the Middle Ages, when they were the only civilization that is thriving here. They never did. They never did take over Vietnam or Korea or Japan. They just was content to improve the lives of the people inside. And I still believe that the Chinese interest is to for the benefits of the people. And I don't think going abroad and grabbing territories will benefit their people. I think they would just want to live peacefully with the other superpowers.
So you don't think there's going to be a day where the rest of us in Asia are going to have to choose?
No, I don't think so. I think with the way the countries are dealing with these two superpowers, I think we'd like to have to be friends with them. And there should not be conflict within these two. Because, you know, I feel that if these two superpowers will have a shooting war there in West Philippine Sea, the Philippines will be the battleground, and that leave us nothing. They'll be killing again many millions of Filipinos. And I keep telling people, you know, we don't want our country to be again the battleground like what happened in World War II, when there was this war between Japan and the United States. In our country, we are not even part of this conflict. We're just the battleground, and it killed 1 million Filipinos.
And that's definitely something that one would not want to have happen again.
I don't think so. I've been telling you in my interviews that China and the U.S. will never go to a shooting war. They know the consequences. I think it will be, you know, they have good, their economies are there up. Why would they destroy it by shooting each other?
But countries act foolishly, sir. Otherwise, we wouldn't have wars.
Well, in Europe, they did those things before.
Exactly. Yeah,
like the First World War, if you have been reading about First World War.
And at that
time,
there
was no need to go to war.
And at that time, Europe was relatively wealthy,
yes,
even.
Yes, yeah.
And yet they still went to war.
But I think people now are more sensible. And I don't think anybody would like to go to war.
Thank you very much for being on Conversation with Sir.
Thank you very much for having me, Lynn. Yeah. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Yeah.